Hi, I'm Gary Bauman from Check-In Asia. It's Friday, 31st of January, 2020, and this is a special Novel Coronavirus Update edition of the Southeast Asia Travel Show. Hello and happy Lunar New Year to you wherever you are listening in. It's just me this week as Hannah is away working with her clients. But she has helped me put together a special coronavirus outbreak update as today, which is the 31st of January, 2020, marks 1 month since the first outbreak in Wuhan, China. Now, although she's not here, Hannah and I have both spoken to our clients and contacts in China, in Hong Kong, and across Southeast Asia to try and put together a feeling of what really is happening in the travel and tourism economy and what may happen through the first quarter of 2020. As I speak to you now, I have on screen some figures from a Chinese website called 3g.dxy.cn, which regularly reports the latest figures on the coronavirus outbreak. And as of 7:26 a.m. this morning in China, the current figures are that there are 9,066 confirmed coronavirus cases in China. There are 12,167 suspected cases, and there have been 213 deaths. Now, last night, the 30th of January, the World Health Organization declared the coronavirus outbreak as a global health emergency. It said that it is a very active outbreak, and more specifically, an intense epidemic in Wuhan and Hubei province of China. So far, 99% of the cases reported have been in mainland China, and only about 1% outside. The current figures are that there are over 100 cases in 22 countries and regions outside of mainland China. Now, those countries are Australia, Canada and the US, Japan, Korea, here in Southeast Asia, Cambodia, Vietnam, Singapore, Thailand, Malaysia and Philippines, in South Asia, India, Sri Lanka and Nepal, United Arab Emirates in the Middle East. In Europe, there are four countries: Germany, France, Italy, and Finland. And outside of mainland China, there have also been cases in Hong Kong, Macau, and Taiwan. Of those international countries, both Japan and Thailand have recorded 14 cases. Okay, we're going to break this mini update, we're going to keep it fairly brief, into three different sections. Number one, we're going to look at how the virus outbreak occurred and how quickly it spread across China and around Southeast Asia. Part two, we're going to look at the travel and tourism economic impact during the Spring Festival or Chinese New Year holiday, which is coming to an end. And part three, we're going to take a look ahead at the potential impact and some of the vulnerabilities in the travel and tourism sector over the first quarter of 2020. So we'll take a quick break and then we'll come back. Okay, so let's begin part one and look at how the novel coronavirus outbreak started and how it spread in the period up to Chinese New Year. So if we go back 1 month to the 31st of December 2019, the World Health Organization in China was notified by the Chinese authorities of an outbreak of pneumonia cases in the city of Wuhan in central China. And these cases seem to share similar characteristics and all seem to emanate around a seafood market in the city. Now, in the first 4 days, between 31st of December and 3 January 2020, 44 cases were reported in the city of Wuhan, which set alarm bells ringing that something serious was afoot. A few days later, on the 7th of January 2020, China confirmed to the World Health Organization that it had identified a new form of the coronavirus. Now, this is the same family of viruses as SARS, severe acute respiratory syndrome, which killed almost 800 people in China, Hong Kong, and other countries in Southeast Asia and around the world in 2003, and the MERS virus, Middle East respiratory syndrome, which caused economic damage in South Korea in 2015. Now, 3 days after that, on the 10th of January 2020, the 40-day Spring Festival travel period began in China, which marks the start of the Chinese New Year celebrations. Now, although Chinese New Year is widely known around the world for the Golden Week period, which is around Chinese New Year's Eve and Chinese New Year, because that's when most people travel internationally. The 40-day Spring Festival period enables people across China to get home for the holidays, to spend time with their families. We're talking of a country of 1.4 billion people. And several years ago, before the high-speed rail network was rolled out in China, it was very, very difficult to get home. So this period was extended to allow people time both to get home before the holidays and then also to get back to work or back to their cities where they actually reside after the Chinese New Year period. So that 40-day period began on the 10th of January. 2 days later, on the 12th of January, China shared the genetic sequence of the novel coronavirus with the WHO. 3 days after that, on the 15th of January, the first overseas case was reported in Japan. Now, in the week beginning 20th of January, this story started to gain extra momentum for two reasons. One, the infection rate was accelerating both in China and beyond mainland Chinese borders, and the Chinese New Year holiday was looming. Chinese New Year's Eve and Chinese New Year's Day on the 24th and 25th are huge celebrations when people tend to spend time with their families, and also it sparks the start of the international travel period. This year, the Chinese authorities expected that there would be around about 3 billion individual travel trips made domestically in China. Of those, around 444 million were expected to be made on trains. Last year, in 2019, during Chinese New Year, there were around 6.3 million outbound trips from China. And this year, there were expectations that could rise to around about 7 million. On the 22nd of January, 2 days before the Chinese New Year's Eve holiday, I was invited onto Channel News Asia in Singapore to discuss the potential ramifications of what was happening. And it was very, very clear that this was a serious outbreak. It is winter in China, and that's one of the key factors. This is a time of year in Northeast Asia, which includes China, Korea, and Japan, when it's very, very cold. You see people on the streets wearing masks because flus and colds do transmit at this time of year. And with this outbreak coming at this time of year, obviously the fear factor starts to rise a little bit, and the infection rate meant that during Chinese New Year, with the volume of domestic travel as well as inbound and outbound travel, that this virus was likely to spread very, very quickly. On the 24th of January, that was confirmed when China prevented its tour agencies and tour operators from selling any more international or domestic packages. And that brought us right up to the Chinese New Year period and sparked concerns around the Asia region and internationally about what the impact would be for travel and tourism. So let's take another quick break and then we'll come back and look at what actually happened during the Chinese New Year period. Okay, so let's look at part two, what actually happened during Chinese New Year holiday period in China and Southeast Asia. Now, the celebrations this year were obviously muted in China. Official celebrations in cities like Beijing and Shanghai were cancelled. Domestic tourism seems most likely to be down quite considerably for numbers of reasons. One, primarily that many cities are actually on effective lockdown. A lot of people are unwilling to travel because of the rapid spread of infection to many cities. There are cases now in every single region of China, and there have been deaths in many regions as well. It's not just, although the primary outbreak is concentrated in the Wuhan and Hubei province area, this really has spread right across China and also to Macau and to Hong Kong. So this is normally a very joyful period. It's a period of family entertainment, of family celebration, and also of travel. Now, the outbound figures into Southeast Asia seem to have held up relatively well during the Spring Festival itself. But what the impact will, and we'll come to that in part three, is what happens afterwards, given the fact that there is a ban on tour packages internationally and domestically. The Chinese government has also extended the period for this Spring Festival. It will run until next Monday, the 2nd of February. But many businesses across China will not open for another week, and that's the 9th of February. Consequently, many people have delayed their travel back to China. Some experts are suggesting that this period is quite crucial now for the intensity of the outbreak. As people start to travel again back to their hometowns, back to their home cities, a lot of Chinese nationals will be traveling back to Hong Kong after spending the holidays at home. A lot of people will be traveling back to China from Southeast Asia. A lot of people in Southeast Asia will be traveling across the region, heading home from the holidays. So there'll be a greater mix of people at airports in very confined spaces. And there are concerns that this could see a spike in the cases happening over the next few days. At the same time, during these holidays, we've seen the World Health Organization Director General take a trip with his team to China to talk with the Chinese President Xi Jinping and leading health experts to get a real handle on what's happening. One of the primary focuses of this outbreak is that it has emerged. It's a zoonotic disease, which means it initially was transferred from animals to humans. Many of the cases, in fact, about 98% of the cases that we've seen so far outside of mainland China have a China travel-related history. In most cases, they are Chinese citizens who have traveled overseas, unaware that they are infected. The incubation period, nobody exactly knows, but it's somewhere between 3 and 7 days. So people have traveled overseas, and then they've fallen sick. But the next stage of this virus, and this is where it gets more dangerous, is human-to-human transmission. And we've already seen cases in the United States, in Germany, Vietnam, and Japan. And this is where the current focus of the health authorities is trying to stem the number of human-to-human infections. The impact in Hong Kong and Macau has been significant. Hong Kong doesn't need any more bad news, of course, after several months of anti-China protests, which have really decimated large parts of its economy, particularly its tourism economy. Macau, which was starting to gain good traction of travel from Southeast Asia, particularly from the Philippines, Malaysia, Thailand, and Indonesia, it's had cases and it's really looking as though things might be a little bit bleak there over the coming months or two. So that brings us up to where we currently stand right now. And then last night, of course, on the 30th of January, the World Health Organization declared the coronavirus to be a global health emergency. And that places it alongside outbreaks such as the Zika virus, H1N1, and Ebola. WHO has said that it has done this not to spark further fear and to incite panic, but to actually be able to better support countries that have weaker health systems and which potentially are vulnerable to the spread of this disease, to make them more ready to be able to treat cases and to prevent deaths. The main problem with that, again, although it said it does not recommend curbing of travel or trade with China, is that the travel industry in particular does work on perception. And once a global health emergency has been announced, there is a ban from China on outbound tours and group packages, there is this feeling at the moment that the tourism economy is going to suffer quite considerably in the coming weeks and months. And now we'll take a look at that in part three. Okay, so let's wrap up this mini update with part three, and let's look at what could happen in travel and tourism across China and Southeast Asia in the first quarter of 2020. Now, this is particularly relevant because at the end of the Chinese New Year period, traditionally, most years, this heralds a kickstart of economic activity, both in China and across the Asia region. There's more business travel, the conference season tends to start, flight volumes tend to rise. Over the next first quarter, you tend to see a lot of business-related travel. You also see a lot of leisure travel as well. Now, that clearly isn't going to happen this year, and there are a number of reasons for that. Tourism economic analyst Forward Keys have published some figures this morning which show that Chinese air ticket bookings for the period 21st January to 17 February are considerably down year on year. Now, they looked at they compared the bookings pre-Chinese New Year holiday and after. And compared to a year ago, the bookings for Asia Pacific during that period, from 21st of January to 17th of February, are down 15.1% year on year. That's a huge figure. Figures for the Americas are down even more. They are down 22.5%. Now, the average figures for Chinese air ticket bookings for that period that I've just mentioned globally is down 13.8%. Now, those are huge figures, and they're going to have a huge impact on travel and tourism across the region. So we've identified five key areas that we think to look out for over the next 3 months. Number one is the fear factor has returned to travel, and that will have a huge impact on perceptions of travel and the way that travel and tourism operators and destinations will have to market over the coming months. I'll come back to that. Part two, we're going to look at what's going to happen in China, Hong Kong, and Macau. Part three, we'll look at Southeast Asia. Part four, we'll have a look at the upcoming Japan Sakura cherry blossom season, which is increasingly popular with tourists from Southeast Asia. And finally, we'll look at the issue of anti-Chinese sentiment, which is rising in the region, and this virus could make that a little bit worse. Okay, so we'll take another break and then we'll come back. Okay, so number one, what do I mean by the fear factor? Well, over the past 2 or 3 weeks, images across social media, across the TV, have been filled with more and more travelers wearing masks, thermal imaging being used extensively at airports across Southeast Asia, China, and even globally, more checks on planes when they arrive and also when they leave. And then also that figure, that image which we saw back in the SARS period of planes being disinfected by specialist teams that are wearing body suits, full body suits that look like something from a disaster movie. These have huge effect on the perceptions of travel. Now, if you go to any travel and tourism seminar or conference in the Asia region, travel marketers will tell you over and over that the new generation of Asian travelers are very aspirational and they're very emotionally engaged. They take a lot of time to research their travel and they're very, very engaged in areas such as health and safety and security during travel. Now, that's a broad brush approach and it obviously is mostly focused on the millennial travelers. But there is a strong degree in truth in those remarks. And the perceptions of travel at the moment is that there is fear. There is fear for travel to China. There is fear of travel from China into Southeast Asia. There is also, Hannah noticed this with some of her clients, that some Southeast Asian travelers are fearful of traveling generally. That's to any destination, just because of these worries of human-to-human virus transmission. And that could extend internationally as well. So the fear factor is definitely back in travel, and that will have an impact on destination tourism boards and how they market themselves over the coming year. January, we've just gone through this period. It's the traditional reporting season where governments and tourism boards report their figures from the year before. Now, in Southeast Asia, a lot of those figures were record figures last year. It was a very, very busy year. As a corollary to that, many tourism boards set quite high figures for the coming year. Here in Malaysia, it's Visit Malaysia 2020 year, and a target has been set for 30 million tourists throughout the year. As part of that, Indian tourists and Chinese tourists have been allowed a visa waiver for up to 15 days. They won't need to have a visa to enter the country, and that was an aim to boost the tourism numbers. Now, what's become clear is that when high volume targets are set for the year, this period at the beginning of the year is crucial. It's the Chinese New Year period, which usually creates a spike in travel to the region. But also the next 2 months are very, very important because after Chinese New Year, destination tourism boards are really, really trying hard to keep the levels up because you will generally tend to see a bit of a trough in travel after the Chinese New Year period. What seems likely is that the first quarter period will not see countries hitting their targets. Now that puts pressure on the rest of the year, quarters 2, 3, and 4, and we may see more discounting, we may see a higher degree of travel spend as destinations, hotels, and airlines try to fill up their spare capacity. Now that relies, of course, on the coronavirus outbreak being contained. So there is a huge if here. We don't know if it's going to be contained in the current rate of infection, that doesn't seem likely. So that's the fear factor. Let's look at what's happening in China, Hong Kong, and Macau. Now, the World Health Organization has said that it doesn't recommend curbing travel and trade to China, but that seems inevitable. As I mentioned before, we're moving into primary conference and business travel season in China, Hong Kong, and Macau. Now, that just doesn't seem likely to happen. A number of global organizations have said that they're going to be restricting access for their executives traveling into the region. And while the coronavirus outbreak is at this sustained height that we're seeing at the moment, that will continue. Some airlines are also curtailing flights. There are a lot of services being canceled. So we're looking at a period of drop in demand for business travel, which after Chinese New Year is usually quite strong. So China, I think, accepts that the economic value of travel is not something it's going to consider too highly for the immediate period. It really is focused on containing this virus. Hong Kong doesn't need any more bad news, as we've mentioned, and Macau, which was really starting to generate a lot of travel from Southeast Asia, that could suffer as well. What will happen in Southeast Asia? Well, what we're seeing at the moment is the fear factor is definitely here, but forward bookings are what really matter from here. Hannah said that she's been speaking to agents, and small agents are very, very concerned because there are a lot of cancellations and they are not being reimbursed for the fees on that. So the financial squeeze will really be on the small tourism operators across the region. The larger scale operators may be able to cope, but we are seeing that airlines are suspending and cancelling flights into China. So that has effect on the two-way flows of Southeast Asian businessmen and women and leisure travellers going into China, and also the flows from China outbound into the region. This is a huge impact because China is the number one source of visitors to Southeast Asia region. If you go back to 2013, Chinese arrivals accounted for about 12.3% of all visitors into Southeast Asian countries. By 2015, that figure had risen to about 17.1%. In 2018, there were 29.1 million visitors from China into Southeast Asia. And that figure was most certainly likely to rise in 2019. Now, in individual countries in 2019, Thailand was top of the pile. There were 10.99 million Chinese visitors to the country. That's more than a quarter of the 40 million total visitors to Thailand last year. At the lower end of the scale, Lao PDR welcomed 1 million Chinese arrivals for the very first time, and that accounted for 27% of total visitors to the country. So the Chinese market is hugely important, and if we do see a downturn, which seems almost likely, that will require destination tourism boards, airlines, and hotels to reconfigure their budgets and reconfigure their plans for the whole year. Okay, so what will happen to Japan and the Sakura season? Now, as Hannah mentioned in our last podcast, she was at the Bangkok Travel Fair earlier in January, and she noted that Japan destinations, Japan hotels, Japan attractions accounted for almost half of the show space. She said, I think her words were, that Japan is definitely the hot destination for Thai travelers this year. And that extends across the region. There's a lot of bookings from Malaysia to Japan for the cherry blossom season. That will also be from Thailand, from Vietnam. Vietjet, one of the fastest growing airlines in the region, has said that it wanted to launch 5 new services this year from Vietnam to Japan. Japan will be very, very fearful about this because it has already had quite a lot of, I think it's had 14 cases already. It's very, very close to China. There are a lot of business links between China and Japan. So there is potential for this virus to spread further. So I think the Japanese National Tourism Organization, as well as travel agents and tour operators in Southeast Asia, will be monitoring this very, very carefully because there is a possibility that there will be large cancellations, which would be very, very damaging to Japan as it really seeks to diversify its tourism mix. It's become quite reliant on China in the past few years, but it has really started to creatively market itself in Southeast Asia, and it is really starting to generate a lot more tourism visitors. Of course, this year, later in the year, Japan will be hosting the Olympics, and so the Sakura season will probably be a bit of a barometer about what could happen. We're all hoping, of course, that by that time the coronavirus is fully contained and overcome, but at the present rate of infection, we simply just don't know. The other issue that seems to be emerging in the region and which could affect travel and tourism is the rise of anti-China sentiment. Now, this sentiment is latent in the region. It does exist for a number of economic and political reasons. This was highlighted most recently in Indonesia, where there was a case of infraction over fishing rights between China and Indonesia, and that whipped up some sentiment. There were also a case, I think it was last year, where some Chinese tourists arrived in Vietnam wearing T-shirts that showed the Chinese interpretation of the South China Sea territorial rights, which Vietnam challenges. And there was some feeling that this was quite disrespectful to Vietnam, given the fact that the tourists were traveling there And this caused another rise in sentiment. In the past couple of weeks, here in Malaysia, we've seen an online petition asking that citizens from China should be banned from entering Malaysia. And already that has gained 408,000 signatures, and is looking to get 500,000 signatures. So these things are happening. Now, this is not new, and this has been happening for a while. But there is a feeling, I think, in this region, and I think it extends globally, that the coronavirus is China's problem. It's caused in China, and that most of the cases around the world are because of Chinese travelers. Once the human-to-human transmission continues, those sentiments may get worse. We hope that this doesn't happen, because China obviously is just so important to the global travel and tourism economy now. But we do have to be aware that these things may happen. And this has ramifications for Southeast Asian travelers traveling beyond the region as well. Of course, there is a huge Chinese ethnic diaspora in the region. And many ethnic Chinese living in Southeast Asia travel internationally, and they don't want to get caught up in anti-Chinese sentiment when they're traveling to countries around the world. Okay, so that pretty much wraps up this mini update. We hope that we've provided some insights that are useful to you, and we'd love to hear your feedback on what you think, on what you're seeing happening in your own destinations, and how you perceive that travel and tourism economy might be affected by this coronavirus going forward. Now, Hannah will be back next week. We're going to put up another podcast. It'll be a much lighter subject. But in the meantime, please do send us your thoughts and your feedback. You can contact us on Facebook at the SEA Travel Show, on Twitter at SEA Travel Show, and Instagram, SEA Travel Show. You can also send us an email at the SEA Travel Show at gmail.com. Okay, we'll be back next week, and we look forward to talking Southeast Asia travel and tourism with you again soon.